Chapter 90. A day or two after the quilt tea party at the Wilderness, Mr. Swiveller walked into Sampson Brass's office at the usual hour, and being alone in that temple of probity, placed his hat upon the desk, and taking from his pocket a small parcel of black crepe, applied himself to folding and pinning the same upon it, after the manner of a hatband. Having completed the construction of this appendage, he surveyed his work with great complacency, and put his hat on again very much over one eye, to increase the mournfulness of the effect. These arrangements perfected to his entire satisfaction, he thrust his hands into his pockets, and walked up and down the office with measured steps. "It has always been the same with me," apostrophe said Mr. Swiveller, "always. 'Twas ever thus from childhood's hour I've seen my fondest hopes decay. I never loved a tree or flower, but 'twas the first to fade away. I never nursed a dear gazelle, to glad me with its soft black eye, but when it came to know me well, and love me, it was sure to marry a market gardener." Apostrophe, overpowered by these reflections, Mr. Swiveller stopped short at the client's chair, and flung himself into its open arms. "And this," apostrophe said Mr. Swiveller, with a kind of bantering composure, "is life, I believe." "Oh, certainly. Why not? I'm quite satisfied. I shall wear," apostrophe added Richard, taking off his hat again, and looking hard at it, as if he were only deterred by pecuniary considerations from spurning it with his foot, "I shall wear this emblem of woman's perfidy, in remembrance of her with whom I shall never again thread the windings of the mazy, whom I shall never more pledge in the rosy, who, during the short remainder of my existence, will murder the balmy." Ha, ha, ha. Apostrophe, it may be necessary to observe, lest there should appear any incongruity in the close of this soliloquy, that Mr. Swiveller did not wind up with a cheerful, hilarious laugh, which would have been undoubtedly at variance with his solemn reflections, but that, being in a theatrical mood, he merely achieved that performance which is designated in melodramas laughing like a fiend, apostrophe for it seems that your fiends always laugh in syllables, and always in three syllables, never more nor less, which is a remarkable property in such gentry, and one worthy of remembrance. The billful sounds had hardly died away, and Mr. Swiveller was still sitting in a very grim state in the client's chair, when there came a ring, or, if we may adapt the sound to his then humor, a knell at the office bell. Opening the door with all speed, he beheld the expressive countenance of Mr. Chuckster, between whom and himself a fraternal greeting ensued. "You're devilish early at this pestiferous old slaughterhouse," apostrophe said that gentleman, poising himself on one leg, and shaking the other in an easy manner. "Rather," apostrophe returned Dick. "Rather," apostrophe apostrophe retorted Mr. Chuckster, with that air of graceful trifling which so well became him. "I should think so. Why, my good feller, do you know what o'clock it is? 9:30 a.m. in the morning. Apostrophe apostrophe, won't you come in?" Apostrophe apostrophe said Dick. "All alone. Swiveller solus. 'Tis now the witching apostrophe hour of night. Apostrophe, when churchyards yawn, apostrophe, and graves give up their dead." Apostrophe, at the end of this quotation in dialogue, each gentleman struck an attitude, and immediately subsiding into prose walked into the office. Such morsels of enthusiasm are common among the glorious Apollos, and were indeed the links that bound them together, and raised them above the cold dull earth. "Well, and how are you, my buck?" apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Chuckster, taking a stool. "I was forced to come into the city upon some little private matters of my own, and couldn't pass the corner of the street without looking in, but upon my soul I didn't expect to find you. It is so everlastingly early." Apostrophe, Mr. Swiveller expressed his acknowledgments, and it appearing on further conversation, that he was in good health, and that Mr. Chuckster was in the like enviable condition, both gentlemen, in compliance with a solemn custom of the ancient brotherhood to which they belonged, joined in a fragment of the popular duet of All's Well, apostrophe with a long shake at the end. And what's the news? Apostrophe apostrophe said Richard. The town's as flat, my dear feller, apostrophe replied Mr. Chuckster, as the surface of a Dutch oven. There's no news. By the by, that lodger of yours is a most extraordinary person. He quite eludes the most vigorous comprehension, you know. Never was such a feller. Apostrophe, what has he been doing now? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Dick. By Jove, sir, apostrophe returned Mr. Chuckster, taking out an oblong snuff box, the lid whereof was ornamented with a fox's head curiously carved in brass, that man is an unfathomable. Sir, that man has made friends with our article clerk. There's no harm in him, but he is so amazingly slow and soft. Now, if he wanted a friend, why couldn't he have one that knew a thing or two, and could do him some good by his manners and conversation? I have my faults, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Chuckster. No, no, apostrophe interposed Mr. Swiveller. Oh yes I have my faults, no man knows his faults better than I know mine. But, apostrophe said Mr. Chuckster, I'm not meek. My worst enemies every man has his enemies, sir, and I have mine never accused me of being meek. And I tell you what, sir, if I hadn't more of these qualities, that commonly endear man to man, than our article clerk has, I'd steal a Cheshire cheese, tie it round my neck, and drown myself. I'd die degraded, as I had lived. I would upon my honor. Apostrophe, Mr. Chuckster paused, rapped the fox's head exactly on the nose with the knuckle of the forefinger, took a pinch of snuff, and looked steadily at Mr. Swiveller, as much as to say that, if he thought he was going to sneeze, he would find himself mistaken. Not contented, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Chuckster, with making friends with Abel, he has cultivated the acquaintance of his father and mother. Since he came home from that wild goose chase, he has been there, actually been there. He patronizes young Snobby besides. You'll find, sir, that he'll be constantly coming backwards and forwards to this place. Yet I don't suppose that beyond the common forms of civility, he has ever exchanged half a dozen words with me. Now, upon my soul, you know, apostrophe said Mr. Chuckster, shaking his head gravely, as men are wont to do, when they consider things are going a little too far, this is altogether such a low-minded affair, that if I didn't feel for the governor, and know that he could never get on without me, I should be obliged to cut the connection. I should have no alternative. Apostrophe, Mr. Swiveller, who sat on another stool opposite to his friend, stirred the fire in an excess of sympathy, but said nothing. As to young Snob, sir, apostrophe pursued Mr. Chuckster with a prophetic look, you'll find he'll turn out bad. In our profession we know something of human nature, and take my word for it, that the feller that came back to work out that shilling, will show himself one of these days, in his true colors. He's a low thief, sir. He must be. Apostrophe, Mr. Chuckster being roused, would probably have pursued this subject further, and in more emphatic language, but for a tap at the door, which seeming to announce the arrival of somebody on business, caused him to assume a greater appearance of meekness than was perhaps quite consistent with his late declaration. Mr. Swiveller, hearing the same sound, caused his stool to revolve rapidly on one leg until it brought him to his desk, into which, having forgotten in the sudden flurry of his spirits to part with the poker, he thrust it as he cried, "Come in!" Apostrophe, apostrophe, who should present himself, but that very kit who had been the theme of Mr. Chuckster's wrath. Never did man pluck up his courage so quickly, or look so fierce, as Mr. Chuckster when he found it was he. Mr. Swiveller stared at him for a moment, and then leaping from his stool, and drawing out the poker from its place of concealment, performed the broadsword exercise with all the cuts and guards complete, in a species of frenzy. Is the gentleman at home? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Kit, rather astonished by this uncommon reception. Before Mr. Swiveller could make any reply, Mr. Chuckster took occasion to enter his indignant protest against this form of inquiry, which he held to be of a disrespectful and snobbish tendency, inasmuch as the inquirer, seeing two gentlemen then and there present, should have spoken of the other gentleman. Or rather, for it was not impossible that the object of his search might be of inferior quality, should have mentioned his name, leaving it to his hearers to determine his degree as they thought proper. Mr. Chuckster likewise remarked that he had some reason to believe this form of address was personal to himself, and that he was not a man to be trifled with as certain snobs whom he did not more particularly mention or describe might find to their cost. "I mean the gentleman upstairs," apostrophe said Kit, turning to Richard Swiveller. "Is he at home?" Apostrophe, "Why?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, rejoined Dick. "Because if he is, I have a letter for him." Apostrophe, "From whom?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Dick. "From Mr. Garland." Apostrophe, "Oh." Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Dick, with extreme politeness. "Then you may hand it over, sir. And if you're to wait for an answer, sir, you may wait in the passage, sir, which is an airy and well-ventilated apartment, sir." Apostrophe, "Thank you," apostrophe, returned Kit. "But I am to give it to himself, if you please." Apostrophe, the excessive audacity of this retort so overpowered Mr. Chuckster, and so moved his tender regard for his friend's honor, that he declared, if he were not restrained by official considerations, he must certainly have annihilated Kit upon the spot. A resentment of the affront which he did consider, under the extraordinary circumstances of aggravation attending it, could but have met with the proper sanction and approval of a jury of Englishmen, who, he had no doubt, would have returned a verdict of justifiable homicide, coupled with a high testimony to the morals and character of the avenger. Mr. Swiveller, without being quite so hot upon the matter, was rather shamed by his friend's excitement, and not a little puzzled how to act, Kit being quite cool and good-humored, when the single gentleman was heard to call violently down the stairs. "Didn't I see somebody for me come in?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the lodger. "Yes, sir," apostrophe, replied Dick. "Certainly, sir." Apostrophe, "Then where is he?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, roared the single gentleman. "He's here, sir," apostrophe, rejoined Mr. Swiveller. "Now, young man, don't you hear you're to go upstairs? Are you deaf?" Apostrophe, Kit did not appear to think it worth his while to enter into any altercation, but hurried off and left the glorious Apollos gazing at each other in silence. "Didn't I tell you so?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Chuckster. "What do you think of that?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Swiveller being in the main a good-natured fellow, and not perceiving in the conduct of Kit any villainy of enormous magnitude, scarcely knew what answer to return. He was relieved from his perplexity, however, by the entrance of Mr. Sampson and his sister, Sally, at sight of whom Mr. Chuckster precipitately retired. Mr. Brass and his lovely companion appeared to have been holding a consultation over their temperate breakfast, upon some matter of great interest and importance. On the occasion of such conferences, they generally appeared in the office some half an hour after their usual time, and in a very smiling state, as though their late plots and designs had tranquilized their minds, and shed a light upon their toilsome way. In the present instance, they seemed particularly gay, Miss Sally's aspect being of a most oily kind, and Mr. Brass rubbing his hands in an exceedingly jocose and light-hearted manner. "Well, Mr. Richard," apostrophe, said Brass, "how are we this morning? Are we pretty fresh and cheerful, sir, Mr. Richard?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "Pretty well, sir," apostrophe, replied Dick. "That's well," apostrophe, said Brass. "Ha ha! We should be as gay as larks, Mr. Richard, why not? It's a pleasant world we live in, sir, a very pleasant world. There are bad people in it, Mr. Richard, but if there were no bad people, there would be no good lawyers. Ha ha! Any letters by the post this morning, Mr. Richard? Mr. Swiveller answered in the negative. Ha! Said Brass, no matter. If there's little business today, there'll be more tomorrow. A contented spirit, Mr. Richard, is the sweetness of existence. Anybody been here, sir? Only my friend, replied Dick. May we never want a friend, Brass chimed in quickly, or a bottle to give him. Ha ha. That's the way the song runs, isn't it? A very good song, Mr. Richard, very good. I like the sentiment of it. Ha ha. Your friend's the young man from Witherden's office, I think. Yes, may we never want a nobody else at all, Bin, Mr. Richard? Only somebody to the lodger, replied Mr. Swiveller. Oh, indeed. Cried Brass. Somebody to the lodger, eh? Ha ha. May we never want a friend, or a somebody to the lodger, eh, Mr. Richard? Yes, said Dick, a little disconcerted by the excessive buoyancy of spirits which his employer displayed. With him now. Cried Brass. Ha ha! There let him be, merry and free, to a roll-rolla. Eh, Mr. Richard? Ha ha! Oh, certainly, replied Dick. And who, said Brass, shuffling among his papers, who is the lodger's visitor, not a lady visitor, I hope, eh, Mr. Richard? The morals of the marks, you know, sir, when lovely women stoops to folly and all that, eh, Mr. Richard? Another young man, who belongs to Witherden's too, or half belongs there, returned Richard. Kit, they call him. Kit, eh? Said Brass. Strange name of a dancing master's fiddle, eh, Mr. Richard? Ha ha! Kit's there, is he? Oh! Dick looked at Miss Sally, wondering that she didn't check this uncommon exuberance on the part of Mr. Sampson, but as she made no attempt to do so, and rather appeared to exhibit a tacit Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.